Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
I'm Alex Smith, back in the emergency room with Georgina Woods, the Pacific Climate and Energy Campaigner for Greenpeace in Australia. We're talking about huge expansion plans for mining and exporting climate-crushing coal. And what is being done to resist these mega coal mines now being proposed in Australia?
Well, there are lots of people who are starting to draw the line against coal and say, we've really had enough of this and we can't keep on expanding this industry any further. In different regions, that's happening in different ways. In the region where I live, in the Hunter Valley, there are people taking coal mines to court who are blockading exploration drilling to prevent coal mining from going ahead. And there's sort of ongoing direct action and civil disobedience to chip away at the monolithic power of the coal industry in our region. In other parts of the country, the farming communities particularly are very concerned about the rollout of coal mining in regions that haven't traditionally been affected by it and the impact that will have on land and water, and are locking the gate. They've joined a movement called the Lock the Gate Alliance, who are drawing a line and saying, no, we're not going to have extractive industries on fertile farmland in Australia. So there is a growing resistance movement, partly based in farming communities and partly coming from the conservation movement. It does need to get a lot bigger if we're going to really stop the industry from expanding to the degree that it's currently proposing to. But Greenpeace is really hoping to help that movement grow bigger and to protect the Great Barrier Reef from the coal terminals that are being proposed to be built along its coast.
Can our listeners in other parts of the world help in some way?
I think so. I mean, we are trying to connect up with communities around the world that are fighting fossil fuel development. We're in contact a lot with people in the United States who are fighting coal exports becoming a bigger industry there. And we would love to connect up with people in Canada who are fighting tar sands and the XL pipeline that's going down to the States, because it's our view that governments and corporations have basically abrogated their responsibility to stand up for the things that we value, the communities and also the ecosystems that are under threat from climate change and fossil fuel development. And so it's really up to the people to wrest back that responsibility and say, we don't want these beautiful places to be ruined by the fossil fuel industry, and we're going to work together to make it stop.
Where can people go to get reliable information about the protests and the business of exporting fossil fuels from your country? Can you suggest websites, a Facebook page or Twitter feeds?
Well, there's quite a few at the moment. There isn't one single location. Certainly for the Queensland coal expansion and the coal terminals that are being proposed for the Great Barrier Reef, people can visit www.savethereef.org.au, which is Greenpeace's campaign website for the work that we're doing in Queensland. I would also suggest that people Google the Lock the Gate Alliance and visit their site, because they draw together all of the protest actions that are happening in farming communities and regions in New South Wales and Queensland, and they can find out a lot about their activities there too.
And is there anything else you'd like to add as we wrap up here?
Well, I do think that the time that we have to prevent dangerous climate change from, you know, slipping outside of the control of the human community is rapidly slipping away from us. And so it is important for those of us who care about beautiful places and about communities around the world to intensify our efforts to stop fossil fuel developments from going ahead. We don't really have the option anymore of pleading with government to do it for us. It's in our hands, and we need to do it ourselves.
Thank you. This is Radio EcoShock, and you've been listening to the Senior Climate and Energy Campaigner for Australia and the Pacific, Georgina Woods. And thanks so much, Georgina, and please keep us posted about these new climate-killing mines.
I would love to. Thanks for having me, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith.
All the people seeking truth and change worldwide, coming up slowly, and many more seem to be opening their eyes. Coming up slowly, centuries of twisted truth and lies. Coming up slowly, many people, many places, sick and tired. Coming up slowly, hey, mister, you see I've seen this before, and I don't believe you.
We started out this program with sirens wailing as nature is wheeled into the emergency room. We'll go back to Canada, to Ontario, where nuclear madness is in full bloom. It's only a matter of time until the Great Lakes are irradiated, with millions of people downstream and downwind. And the radioactive trucks are already rolling down the public highways all over North America. It's the dirty secret of the industry. They're calling it Yucca Mountain North, except it's even worse than that. Canada's most populous province of Ontario has a dangerous plan to bury radioactive waste from three giant nuclear power plants. They want to toss it in limestone caverns right beside one of the Great Lakes. We've reached Brenane Lloyd of the nonprofit group Northwatch to find out more. Brenane, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
Why don't we start by telling our world audience what the Great Lakes are, and who is downstream if radiation leaks out of this proposed dump site?
The Great Lakes is the largest set of in-water lakes in the world. So it's home to most of the population of Ontario, although I live in northern Ontario in a less populated area. And Lake Huron is the second in the chain of lakes. So further downstream, we have Lake Erie and Lake Ontario, which are the most densely populated areas.
Right, and there's a lot of American states along there. We got
Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York, Michigan are all downstream.
Right, so that's a lot of people. We're talking Cleveland, Buffalo, and just everybody is down there. And if it leaks, those are the people who are going to have to deal with it too.
Well, and I think with both this proposal and a proposal to bury high-level nuclear waste, it's not a question of if it leaks, it's a question of when it leaks. Not even the nuclear industry says that these systems will keep the waste in forever. They say they'll keep the waste contained for a long period of time. Of course, when you're dealing with nuclear waste, it's radioactive and so hazardous for a very, 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 very long time, virtually into eternity. So keeping it contained, if all goes well, for a long time isn't good enough.
What is the agency trying to build the site, and what do they want to put in there?
Ontario Power Generation is the proponent for the burial scheme at the Bruce Nuclear Power Generating Station, which is right on the shore of Lake Huron. And the waste they're proposing to bury there are low and intermediate level waste. So it's operating waste and refurbishment waste from Ontario's reactors. So Ontario has 20 reactors. And all of the low and intermediate level waste from those reactors are shipped to something called the Western Waste Management Facility, which basically is just a long name for a storage site they've set up at the Bruce Nuclear Generating Station. So we already have a problem because we have 20 reactors generating low and intermediate level waste. And as they are rebuilt, and some have already been rebuilt, there's plans to rebuild more, they also generate something called refurbishment waste. The low-level waste is has a lower level of radioactivity. The intermediate-level waste can be highly radioactive. There's a range of waste in that category, but in Canada, wastes are categorized as low, intermediate, or high, and they only get to be called high if they're the reactor fuel waste. So if there are other kinds of highly radioactive waste, you know, resins that have been used, filters that have been used to collect stray radionuclides in the cooling pool at the reactor station for 20 years, highly radioactive, they're called intermediate because they're not fuel waste. So Ontario Power Generation is the proponent for this scheme for the burial of low and so-called intermediate level waste. Ontario Power Generation is also the majority shareholder in a company called the Nuclear Waste Management Organization, which also has a scheme to bury the high-level waste, the nuclear fuel waste, and they're still looking for a site for that. But these two different burial schemes are intertwined. Same companies, in the case of some of the intermediate-level waste, similar levels of radioactivity, and really we think that one of the motivations for the low and intermediate level waste burial at Bruce is to make it a poster child for the burial of nuclear waste in Canada. And the industry has other ideas. They have ideas about burying it next to Chalk River, and they're looking for a site to bury the high-level waste. You know, it's a huge problem in itself. It's also problematic because it is, by our assessment, intended to be a precedent and set a precedent and pave the way for other burial schemes for other highly radioactive waste in Canada.
So who owns Ontario Power Generation? Is it a government agency? Is it a private company?
Ontario Power Generation is nominally a Crown corporation, so it's owned by the people of Ontario. It's operated by a board, which is described as being arm's length from the government of Ontario, although it can be directed by the government of Ontario. It's certainly arm's length, long arm's length from the people of Ontario.
I was just amazed at how weak this deep geological repository sounds to me. I mean, I'm picturing granite 2 miles down or maybe even salt deposits miles down, but it's not like that at all. Can you tell us about this repository?
The caverns will be about 500 meters, 600, I think 680 is their current number, but these are all, you know, estimates, but about half a kilometer down, and there will be shafts go down, tunnels go out, and caverns or rooms, picture them as caves carved off those tunnels. And it's in limestone. So the top levels of rock are shale, and the lower down levels of rock where the repository will actually be situated are limestone. And Ontario Power Generation, by their design, has very minimal emphasis or very minimal design for engineered containers. So the industry, in industry speak, they talk in burial schemes, they talk about it being a multiple barrier approach, which means you have multiple layers. And typically they talk about having an engineered barrier and then a rock barrier. Now, of course, in the longer term, the difficulty is even if by their design, both those barriers will eventually fail. What's interesting and, you know, troubling with the Bruce design, the OPG's burial at the Bruce, is that there's minimal emphasis on the engineered barrier. It's basically going to go down in the packaging that it shipped in. And then the multiple rock barriers are supposed to be limestone and then shale. Well, you know, unless those radionuclides are trained to go straight up, they're not going to have two barriers. They're going to have one barrier, and that's the limestone. And I think for most people, we have a sense of limestone. It's something that's easily cut to build buildings and so on, makes beautiful white stone buildings, and not much of a barrier. And it's really the cornerstone of their design.
And you mentioned the shipping containers. How will nuclear waste get to this site?
Well, the waste is already being shipped to this site. We already have large volumes of waste being shipped from the Darlington and Pickering nuclear reactor stations to the Bruce Nuclear Generating Station and stored there. There's very little known about the effects of that shipping. We've just gone through or in the middle of a review right now for the license renewal for the Darlington reactor. And one of the things that we were looking at was the shipment of these wastes. And Ontario Power Generation was not required to provide any information about the dose, the radioactivity that people along the route are exposed to. Now, there's two ways of looking at radioactive exposure along transportation route. One is what's called normal exposure. So if there's no accident, and then upset conditions, that's when there is an accident. Ontario Power Generation wasn't required to provide information about either of those. We know from other situations that there is a level of exposure, and we know that there is no safe level of exposure to radioactivity. So if there is a level of exposure, there is a level of risk, and that level of risk increases correspondingly with the amount of exposure. And Ontario Power Generation has not been required to provide information about that exposure and so about that risk. And in fact, for the review for the burial scheme, the transportation issues are excluded from the review with the rationale that it's already happening. And for the Darlington new build, proposal to build new reactors at Darlington, excluded because it's already happening. For the proposal to rebuild reactors at Darlington, so extend their operation for 20 years, transportation excluded because it's already happening. But it's already happening with no public input and no public disclosure about the radioactivity, about the levels of exposure, about the dose associated with being along the transportation route as these materials are moved through communities.
Well, you know, I think this is one of the dirty little secrets of that whole nuclear industry throughout North America and the world. But, you know, especially in the United States and Canada, there are big trucks running down our major public highways through cities with radioactive materials, and we don't know about it, and we don't know the risks, and we don't know that radiation escapes from them, even when they're just driving down the road. Have I got that right?
You've got that right. And what we have increasingly in our cities and even in our small cities, we increasingly have gridlock, we have transportation stops, we have freeways that turn into parking lots. And if you're sitting beside one of those trucks for 2 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour, your dose increases correspondingly. So the longer you are in proximity to that shipment, the greater your dose. Now, the industry will say these are small exposures, these are small doses, and that could be, although that's not really been disclosed in the case of the Ontario shipments, there is still an increase of risk, and it's well established in the science that there is no level of exposure that does not have risk attached to it.
Well, this is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. I lived in Ontario for years. We were always nervous one of these plants was going to go. The CANDU reactors were designed in the 1960s and haven't changed since. The giant Pickering reactor sits right next to millions of people living in Toronto and across the lake from Buffalo. It's been plagued with problems and shutdowns, and that Darlington reactor complex was upwind from my country retreat. You couldn't get away from nuclear worry, and I had to move away from all that. So our guest is Brenane Lloyd of Northwatch, and I want to ask you, after Fukushima, Germany has sworn to get off nuclear power. Aren't people in Ontario worried about another Fukushima-type meltdown ruining their province?
Well, I think people in Ontario are. I think the government of Ontario has stalled in, you know, they're stuck in some, I don't know if it's 1970s think or 1960s think. In 2008, they actually put out a request for proposals from nuclear vendors to build up to four new reactors. Now, they haven't got a proposal that they can, you know, that they can live with because the costs were way over what they expected. Dalton McGuinty, the premier, called it sticker shock. And the vendors, the nuclear industry, was not prepared to take on cost overruns. Now, Ontario has just signed a deal with two potential vendors and given them $26 million just to work out a price for possibly selling them new reactors. They still haven't committed to them, and they certainly shouldn't commit to them. So there's some ideological mud that the provincial government seems to be stuck in. And so I think the people are certainly ready to leave nuclear behind, although unfortunately because of the wastes that have been generated, we'll never actually leave it behind. We'll have to be, you know, in a guardian position forever because of the wastes that have been created. And we certainly have the alternatives. There's lots of enthusiasm for the alternatives. There is a renewable energy contract option which has been supply exceeds opportunity. There are more on renewable energy projects in the proposal, in the queue, then the Ontario Power Authority can integrate into the grid. And that's largely because we have these nuclear units which occupy so much of the grid and create real roadblocks, literal barriers to renewable energies coming online. So the people are ready to move, and the power, renewable power, is ready to move. But we have the provincial government, which seems to be just stuck on the old thing of nuclear. And we've got a large nuclear lobby in Ontario, and perhaps that answers it, or perhaps they just haven't been reading the tea leaves.
Well, or reading the newspapers about what's going on in Fukushima. I mean, it's just a mess there, and it's going to be for hundreds of years. They don't know what to do with this type of accident, and you could have a multiple meltdown in Ontario as well. Now, Brenane, we started talking about the proposed Yucca North nuclear waste repository, a plan right near Lake Huron. There are plenty of Americans living down lake from this Canadian nuke dumping spot. Everybody in northern Ohio, Pennsylvania, New York State needs to pay attention. Have you heard from American groups who object to this plan?
Yes, there's a large number of American residents are expressing their concern, and they're expressing their concern to a hearing panel. There's a joint federal review panel has been set up to review this proposal, and there's an opportunity to send comments in and make your views known. There will be a hearing held sometime in 2013, we expect. And we're hearing for a lot of Americans. There's American organizations, but also individual residents who are very concerned about the proposal and its potential impact on the lake. People are also concerned about the Bruce Nuclear Generating Station itself. And, you know, it's a very large operation, multiple reactors, multiple waste sites, an old reactor, Douglas Point, sitting right on the edge of the lake, has been shut down for decades but never decommissioned. And there's also an incinerator there. They incinerate a lot of the low-level radioactive waste that comes from the three nuclear reactor stations in Ontario. So folks on the U.S. side have many concerns and many legitimate concerns about the reactor station, and the proposal to bury the waste underneath the station on the shore of Lake Huron is certainly one large addition to that list of concerns.
You've just described a really frightening mess to me. Okay, so now, do you think the government will be able to ram through this deep geological disposal facility on Lake Huron, or could a public outcry still stop it?
Well, I think that a public outcry can still stop it. I think we have to use all avenues available. I think that people should, you know, put their oar in the public review, but also express themselves to provincial decision makers in Ontario, but also to the elected folks on the U.S. side. They have great influence on the provincial government in Ontario. So I think that a hue and cry is completely called for, and I think that it can be effective. There was, you might recall, your listeners may recall, there was a plan by Bruce Power a few years ago to ship radioactive steam generators through the Great Lakes to Sweden for something they were calling recycling. It was actually releasing of radioactive materials into the free market, but there was an incredible response to that, and it was stopped. And license was issued for the transport, license expired. So I think that there's no time better than today to become engaged around these issues. And certainly that basket of issues at the Bruce Nuclear Generating Station is a very good focus.
Please give us your website and any other places we should look to find out more.
Good site to look for information about this burial scheme is it's www.bruce-nuclear-waste-burial.ca.
Okay, I'll put a link to that in my blog at ecoshock.info, and also to your group and to some other groups that are working on this, especially on the state side. We've been talking with Bernane Lloyd of Northwatch, located in North Bay, Ontario. Thank you, Bernane.
Thank you so much, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Many people on a mission to unite. We're coming up slowly. Many people spreading message far and wide. We're coming up slowly. And every message has a universal tie. Coming up slowly. Every message for the fate of the unborn child. Coming up slowly.
So Hurricane Sandy is just a metaphor for our current condition to the state we are in. Right now, we are the storm. Someday, when the black clouds clear, maybe we'll all be the rainbow instead. Don't despair. We need you, each and every one. One mind awake can become stronger than 1,000 zombies sleepwalking in a dying civilization. I'm Alex Smith. Thank you for listening, and thank you, really, for caring about your world.
Starving.